and also a message from a pastor as we deal with these trying times. Before we get started with our panel, I would like to introduce to you our two leaders of our organizations who are co-hosting this. First, you will hear greetings from Reverend Robert James, who serves as president of the Mississippi State Conference NAACP, and the Sean B. Lambright Haynes, who serves as executive director of One Voice.
Thank you so much for being on this call. I'm so thankful to have our panelists before us tonight. And what a blessing it is to have such wonderful panelists with experts to share knowledge with us as we deal with the impact of this COVID-19. And I'm thankful for the power of their voices as they speak truth to power to enhance the lives of our citizens. What a joy it is to hear from them tonight. We have Senator Ford with us. What a blessing. And Dr. Melvin from the Mississippi State Conference Health Chair, Bill Byron, the CEO from the Hope Credit Union, Reverend Buckley, the pastor of Cade Chapter, and Congressman Dennis Thomason, our representative, and none other than Derek Johnson, our president and CEO for our national board. So at this time, let me pause and pray, and then I'll turn it back over to Dr. Wiggins. God of our weary years, God of our silent tears, hear our cry, O God, and heal our land. You alone, O God, have the power to comfort, strengthen, and protect us during this outbreak that has affected more than 1,000 people in our state. Hear our cry, O God, and answer us, Lord God, and meet our needs, Lord God, in the midst of this. Hear our cry, O God, and protect the lives of our citizens. For your word has declared that your eyes run to and for throughout this whole universe to show yourself strong. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thank you, Reverend James. And so now we hear from the Sean B. Lambright Haynes, who serves as executive director for One Voice.
Thank you, Corey. Good evening, everyone. We're excited to connect with everybody tonight. I'm sure that everybody has been overloaded with conference calls and Zoom meetings since we've been social distancing, but it's so important for us to stay connected and to share important information, and that's the purpose of tonight's call. When we first began to discuss the agenda for this call, there was a very long list of urgent matters in our community that we wanted to talk about. We wanted to talk about health and safety, first and foremost. We wanted to talk about schools. We wanted to talk about vulnerable families having access to food. We wanted to talk about census and voting rights, aid to small businesses, people who have been laid off, mental health care issues. The list goes on and on. But while we can't get to everything on that list tonight, we're committed to continuing these conversations. This won't be the last call that we host. Before I turn it back over to Corey, I just wanted to say one quick thing about the 2020 census. We received some really good news from our state census partnership specialist this morning about Mississippi's response rate. Our response rate is at 41.5% now, with the national average being 41.3%. So we're doing a pretty good job. Keep up the good work, but we still have to push our communities to go ahead and respond to the census by mail, by phone, or online. And if you all need any help with accessing the census or information about how to help spread the word in your community, let us know, and we'd be glad to help. Corey.
Thank you, Nishambi. And you've just heard both from our president of Mississippi NAACP, Reverend Robert James, and executive director for One Voice, Sean B. Lambright Haynes. At this time, we want to open up and begin our panel. We have a number of people who will bring to you information that we know that a lot of folks have been asking, so much so that when we offered the opportunity for people to ask questions, we had over 75 questions submitted. As Sean B. said, it's hard and challenging with the time to provide answers to all of those questions, but we will try to hit the top-of-the-line issues, and we'll be following up after this call with more information to answer those questions. I think we all have came to the point and understand that this call or this information or what people want to know is a series. There are a lot of issues that are happening across our community. We want to try to be as responsive as possible to be able to provide and share information as to what community members are saying that they need to know. So next, well, I'd like to introduce to you Congressman Benny Thompson, our U.S. House of Representatives representative member, who also serves as a chair of Homeland Security, to talk a little bit about what's happening at the federal level. What does that mean for folks living here in Mississippi? Congressman Thompson.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Wiggins, and to the members of the NAACP, to Nashambi Lambright-Hayes. Always good to hear your voice. I'm happy to be on your call to talk a little bit about the federal response. That federal response has basically been twofold. First of all, it's what we call the disaster response as it relates to what we are doing to get people tested, what we're doing to help counties, health departments, and other entities get the necessary equipment to address this pandemic. So that is a process that's ongoing. Every county has an emergency management director. I would encourage those on the call to figure out who that individual is and make sure you know that person. If there's something going on from a health or pandemic standpoint, that is your local point of contact. That person is a county employee paid partially by Homeland Security and in part by your local county government. So that person is that person in charge. With that respect, FEMA at the federal level will pay for 75% of the cost of anything related to addressing this pandemic. Additionally, that 25% at this point will probably be waived, so it really won't cost local government anything to address it. Now, let me get to the so-called stimulus package or the CARES Act. Congress passed officially last week a $2.2 trillion package. There were several sections on that package. The one that we get the most calls on is people want to know, how do I access my stimulus check? Well, if you are over the age of 17 and an adult, you will get a check. Now, there are some conditions around the payment of the check that you have to meet. First of all, you have to have filed income tax for either 2018 or 2019. Now, for those of you who are retired on Social Security, SSI, or disability or something like that, we finally got it straight that you don't have to fill out a form. We got the IRS to talk to Social Security, and they agreed that you will get your $1,200 stimulus check. At this point, that's a one-time check. For dependents, you'll get $500, and that $500 is for 17 years old and younger. I'm sorry, that was the negotiated number on it. Apart from that, basically will go to anyone. There are some income requirements on it that basically anyone that makes $75,000 individually would not be eligible for the stimulus check. So that's that. Now, another issue is the unemployment insurance. If your job has impacted you to the point that you've been laid off, you are eligible for unemployment insurance. That insurance right now will provide about 13 weeks of unemployment at this point, and it will be somewhere around $600 per week, which is really higher than the normal rate here in Mississippi. So it's a wonderful thing. Those individuals who are trying to contact your local employment office, you have to be patient. There are an awful lot of people who are trying to get into the system, and they're just having tremendous time trying to get it. Now, those folk who are eligible, in addition to the people who've been laid off, are those individuals who are self-employed, barbers, beauticians, people with lawn care service. There's no real category. Some of the people have not even paid unemployment insurance, but the fact that you were running a business and got caught up in this pandemic, you are eligible. So I encourage those people to file. Most of us know children who are in school. As you know, all our school systems, for all intents and purposes, they're out. I would encourage, if you have a school district that's not providing meals to children, to encourage them to do so. We will pay at the federal level 100% of the cost of that breakfast and that lunch. But each school district has to make the decision to participate in that program. In addition to that, there are some enhanced SNAP benefits for individuals and families. That's traditionally called the food stamp program. If you think you're eligible, you should attend. Apart from that, under the small business, and I'm glad that Mr. Bynum is on this call, he can explain it in more detail, but we have made provisions that if you have a business and you want to keep your employees, we will loan you the money to keep your employees if you're open, and if you are one of those that are allowed to stay open. If you are, at the end of the loan, if you meet all the requirements, we'll convert that loan to a grant. So if you are a nonprofit, for instance, a food bank, a daycare center that's nonprofit, you are also eligible for these loans that potentially can get written off at the end of the terms. But I encourage you to look at the requirements. They're not complicated, but you need to have somebody who's familiar with financing to help you with it. So that $2.2 trillion is a lot of money. We fought very hard to make sure that the everyday ordinary citizen could participate in this program, just like the big companies. So on a personal note, I want to thank Speaker Pelosi and a lot of people who worked hard to make sure that these items were included. And to be honest with you, not a single person in the Senate or a single person in the House voted against it. You don't see too many pieces of legislation where everybody vote for it. So this pandemic that we're involved in is a very serious, not just economic catastrophe, but it has serious ramifications for us. We have now had more people to die with this virus than we had in 9/11. Right now, we're leading the world in the number of infections. So we have a lot of work to do. This stimulus package is just a little part of keeping America together. So I thank One Voice and NAACP for putting it together, and I look forward to the question and answer session at the end. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Congressman Thompson. Congressman Thompson, while we have you here, we did get one question, and this question came up several times on questions that were submitted, and it was asking about people having concerns about money or the resources getting to those folks who are most in need, whether the resources, the individual resources, or even relief that was provided to the state to support work here. Can you speak to that?
Well, equal opportunity and civil rights is the state of Mississippi has to execute those documents. What we have to do, our members of the state legislature, our county officials, our municipal officials, as well as our community-based organizations, we're going to have to monitor how these funds are spent. We need to be talking to the governor's office, lieutenant governor, to make sure that they understand that this is not a slush fund or anything for you to use on your pet projects. We send the money here for the greatest need. And so we all have to make our case. So I would hope that after this call, we contact the governor's office and see how they plan to use the majority of this money as it relates to the stimulus package. So I don't want to second guess how it's going to be used, but I think in this instance, the squeaky wheel is going to get some grease. So I hope some of the people on this call start squeaking.
Thank you. Thank you, Congressman Thompson. And with that, one of our guests that we have here is Senator Angela Turner Ford, who is chair of Mississippi Legislative Black Caucus, and who can speak to what's going on and what's happening in Mississippi and the state legislative response. Senator Turner Ford.
Corey, we may be having some technical difficulties with Senator Turner Ford. Can we move on to the next person while we resolve that?
Sure, no problem. Thank you. And we will wait and make sure that we get Senator Turner Ford on the line so we can make sure we hear from her. Next, we do have Dr. Sandra Carr Melvin. A big part of this is making sure that people are informed and have the latest information as it relates to healthcare issues and the public health threat. We know that there has been a lot of information sort of shared publicly, whether it's coming out federally, whether the information that came out from our state officials. We have the fortunate ability to have Dr. Sandra Carr Melvin, who serves as the state health chair for NAACP, and Dr. Carr Melvin is an epidemiologist here in Mississippi and can speak to the public health threat here in Mississippi and what it means for us moving forward. Dr. Melvin.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you, Dr. Wiggins. So what I'd like to do is begin by just giving you a snapshot of what we look like today and just remind you all that this situation is fluid, so even as I'm giving you these numbers, the numbers have already changed. As of today, nationwide, we had over 239,000 cases of COVID-19 in the United States. We had over 5,700 deaths, and these cases were reported in all 50 states, the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Guam, the Northern Mariana Islands, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Now, if we shift to the state of Mississippi, which is the focus of our tele-town hall meeting, we today have reported as of 6 p.m. yesterday, 1,117 cases. So I broke these cases down to give you more of a profile of what we look like today in terms of the cases that have been reported. And these are cases reported by the Mississippi State Department of Health. Of those less than 18 and 29 years of age, 14% were reported. 34% of the cases were between 30 and 49 years of age. 18% were between the ages of 50 and 59, and 34% were over the age of 60. Now, I do want to point out that there has been some discussion about age and risk. 52% of those cases were between the ages of 30 and 59 years of age. Based on the data we have, more women than men at 59% versus 40% have been diagnosed with the virus. And when we look at the deaths, we've had 26 deaths as of yesterday, and most of the cases, 65%, were in the age group of 60 and older, but 35% of those deaths were also between the ages of 30 and 59. And I just want to say that these are cases that have been reported. This does not capture people who did not come to the hospital and who have not been seen by a doctor and who may have mild symptoms. I also looked at the counties in the state. Of the 82 counties that we have here in Mississippi, 78 counties have reported cases. Eight counties have had greater than 30 cases. Eight counties have had between greater than 21 to 30 cases. 14 counties have had between 11 and 20 cases. 15 counties have had between 6 to 10 cases. And 33 counties have now reported between 1 and 5 cases. I should also note that there are some long-term care outbreaks in the state in 20 counties. 22 of those, there are 22 outbreaks currently, and 20 of those have occurred in counties here in Mississippi. Two have been in Lauderdale County. Just to move on to a little bit of the symptoms so that you'll be aware if you may be infected by the virus. The symptoms may appear between 2 and 14 days after exposure, which means you are still infective even before you know that you have the virus. Some symptoms are fever, cough, shortness of breath. So when should you seek medical attention? If you develop emergency warning symptoms, get medical attention immediately. What are those symptoms? Trouble breathing, persistent pain or pressure in the chest, confusion, bluish lips or face, and these are not inclusive. So if something feels different, you may need to contact your physician. How to protect yourself? Of course, we've been hearing about this in the media. Of course, stay home if you're sick. Avoid close contact to anyone who is sick. Cover your coughs and sneezes. If you are sick, especially with shortness of breath, severe cough, fever, or severe chest pain, call your doctor for instructions on how to visit them safely. And, of course, protect yourself. Limit your gatherings to events where 10 or more people would come into close contact. And, actually, the governor yesterday put out a shelter-in-place order. So, really, you just need to really stay at home if you don't need to be out. Practice social distancing. Prevention in the community. If you don't have to go out, don't. And also that includes weddings and funerals. Some of the cases that have been reported have been directly linked to weddings and funerals. So now what is Mississippi doing? On March 15, 2020, the Medical Licensure Board released a proclamation encouraging all physicians to begin to use telemedicine to avoid unnecessary patient travel and in order to also provide other updates, such as refills on their prescriptions. In response to the coronavirus outbreak, the Mississippi Division of Medicaid expanded its coverage to include telehealth services throughout the state to allow for the use of telemedicine to care for patients while limiting unnecessary travel, clinic visits, and possible exposure. Of course, the Mississippi State Department of Health and CDC continues to monitor and update their websites on a daily basis. And they both also have important information about resources, preventive measures, and cases in Mississippi. Now, on April 1st, 2020, Governor Tate Reeves did issue a statewide shelter-in-place order to become effective for Friday, April 3rd, 2020, at 5 p.m. CST. Central Time, and through April 20th, 2020. If you do have questions, there is now a COVID-19 hotline, and that number is 877-978-6453, and it's open on Monday through Friday from 8 to 5 p.m. There's also a website that is a 24-hour website, and it is healthymississippi.com. Healthy Mississippi is one word. The other response is UMC, in partnership with the Department of Health, has begun to have one-day drive-up testing locations, and those locations provide free testing, and you can also find a listing of those sites on the Mississippi State Department of Health website. Now, if you do not have insurance, you can also seek care at one of the community health centers in your area, but remember to call first so that you can be screened. Now, in light of all of the things that we've heard, all the things we know, we also know here in Mississippi there are also some unique challenges. One of the things was evident to me as I was preparing for this presentation, and that's the surveillance component. There is a concern that complete demographics are not readily available. I was able to get information about age, gender, and residence, but there was no readily available information about race. And I think it's important for us to have all of the information available so that we can develop a complete profile of the individuals that are at risk for COVID-19 infection. The second challenge that we face here is access for underserved populations. Given the unique challenges for rural communities, which is exacerbated by healthcare provider shortages and closure of rural hospitals, testing and screening plans also need to be developed to ensure that the true magnitude of illness and death in those communities are also captured. And the last challenge that I'd like to present to you are the challenge that's presented to our poor and homeless populations. They are more likely to contract the virus because of a lack of resources to prepare and protect themselves against the virus. So all of our efforts to stem the tide of this virus should include consideration for these challenges as we develop a preparedness plan to defeat and stem the flow of the spread of the virus within this community. So, Dr. Wiggins?
Dr. Melvin, thank you for that. And actually, in what you presented, you answered most of the questions that we had submitted. And I think one of the takeaways we heard is that in order to for us to better understand what we need to be doing in our communities, is that we do need some data as a data related to race that's being reported out, so we can better understand what's happening in our communities. And I imagine some of that also may be tied to having more information about where testing sites are located to make sure that our communities have access to the resources that they need.
That's correct.
Thank you. I think we have Senator Turner Ford back on the line, and we want to bring her back on to talk about what's happening from a legislative response that's happening here in Mississippi. Senator?
Thank you so much. And I'd just like to say that I really appreciate the opportunity to get on the call. Thank you to Congressman Thompson, Mr. Johnson, Ms. Hayes, Commissioner Willie Simmons, who invited me to participate in the group. And from I would say that the perspective that I have as chair of the Mississippi Legislative Black Caucus is, I would say, more boots on the ground, for lack of a better phrase. As chair of the caucus, we have convened some Zoom telephone conference calls. Yesterday, we were able to speak with Congressman Thompson, as well as a national epidemiologist, who shared with us information about the transmission of the virus. We were able to ask, I would say, specific questions, got those answered, and then reached out to Dr. Dobbs, who is the state health officer. He provided vital information as well. We know that the coronavirus is affecting all areas of our communities. And as a legislator, it's important for us to make sure that we are operating within the parameters of the law, number one, but to make sure that resources, as they come into the state, the ventilators, the protective medical equipment, that those resources make it to our communities. And to make sure also that our constituents are informed about the symptoms, they know who to reach out to for medical appointments, medical visits, and that they get the needed help in order to preserve their lives and to recover from the illness. Executive orders have been coming out of the governor's office, and it was alluded to earlier that we're now under a shelter in place that will take place that will take effect tomorrow afternoon at 5 o'clock. And the thing that I've seen as I move around in my local community is that individuals do not appear to be taking the infection of coronavirus seriously. Social distancing. You need to make sure that you're not within 6 feet of another person. And these executive orders carry along with them penalties, where law enforcement officers can, if they see behavior that's in violation of these orders, individuals can be arrested, they could be fined. I believe all of that, though, is really important to make sure that it's stressed that we modify our behaviors to contain the virus and, as you hear, flatten the curve. One of the questions that I received today as I was going through the order and presenting materials to individuals that I was aware of, they wanted to know what sorts of businesses are now prohibited from operating. And even though essential businesses have been listed, and there's an exhaustive list, and that can be found on the Secretary of State's website, there are certain businesses that should not be functioning, and that's going to be your fitness centers, your exercise gyms, beauty salons, barber salons. Those businesses are now prohibited from being in operation once this deadline takes effect tomorrow at 5 o'clock. Make sure that you monitor your symptoms, know your condition, practice, I would say, good respiratory hygiene. And it's important because in Mississippi, we don't have the access to health care that a lot of our neighboring states do. Mississippi has not expanded Medicaid. Even though there has been a push from the members of the Legislative Black Caucus, from Democratic members of the Senate and of the House, that has fallen on deaf ears up to this point. So we must remain healthy. We have to do all that we can to protect the most vulnerable citizens in our community so that we won't be impacted negatively by this disease. Essential travel is the word or the buzz phrase for the executive order. So you're allowed to come out of your homes to go to work, to seek necessary medical treatment, to replenish food supplies in your home. But in terms of just being out, hanging out in parks, those things, those activities are now prohibited. Our job, I believe, as a Mississippi Legislative Black Caucus is to make sure that we are informed about the illness, that we help get resources to our constituents, and to also make sure that our constituents are informed. And Congressman Thompson mentioned the stimulus package that has been passed by Congress. Well, eventually, you know, those funds are going to trickle down to the state. And we have to be vigilant to make sure that the resources that come into the legislative purview, that they make it to the areas of the community that need it most. And that's where we stand guard, and that's what we want to work on. So I appreciate the opportunity to get on the call. At this point, we don't know if other executive orders may be coming out of the governor's office. This is an unfolding saga. We don't, you know, as time progresses, there may need to be other restrictive measures put in place. But make sure that you monitor your activity. Pay attention to the orders that are coming about, and let's make sure that we adhere to them in order to protect ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Turner Ford. I did have one question that was submitted, and this question, I think you spoke to this earlier, but it may be great for people to hear, was around, again, resources and making sure that resources get to the communities that are needed, particularly with people being able to access unemployment, and folks getting what they need. Is there anything that folks need to be thinking about or considering in their local communities or even doing now to make sure they can get those things that are needed?
I would say yes. As Congressman Thompson mentioned, every county has an emergency management director. You can reach out to them. Those individuals have they are able to identify the testing sites. They know where you can go to if you need medical attention. For instance, I know locally they have actually designated certain places where you can test. You can't just go into the emergency room. So reach out. I would say the local emergency management director is an awesome contact. And from there, legislators are available to assist also. But in terms of those resources, a lot of our communities either have hospitals that may be closed, or the capacity may not fit the need of the community. That's why it's important that we refrain from contacting our getting in too close of contact, because we will end up overloading the system and people who need treatment can't get it. So reach out to the emergency management directors, reach out to your legislators. The important message that I've heard is first contact these treatment providers by phone. Try not to just lunge into the emergency room, because we want to make sure that our health professionals are healthy as well. So resources are key. At this point, without us having, I think, a full scope of how many cases are in the community, our hospitals are not filled yet, but we need to make sure that they aren't and do everything that we can to prevent that.
Thank you, Senator Turner Ford. As we know, as this issue continues to impact many Mississippians and many communities, not only from a public health standpoint, a number of issues that are driven by economic factors, whether it's individually or for those folks who may be business owners, and trying to decide what are the things they need to be considering as they move forward in their time of need. Next, we will have with us CEO Bill Bynum of Hope Credit Union to speak to us a little bit and share information, considerations around from an economic frame for communities and for small business owners, individuals, as we're moving forward in this time. Bill.
Thank you, Corey, and thanks to you and WBCP and One Voice for convening this important conversation. I can't get into the details of COVID without at least putting into some context where Mississippi was, and particularly people of color Mississippi, found themselves prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. The reduction of income and income for people during this crisis is going to be particularly hard for folks in Mississippi, because we already had very little cushion to withstand an unexpected financial shock. For example, over a half of Mississippi households don't have enough cash or liquid assets to hang on for 3 months in the face of an interruption in income. And this, for black folks in Mississippi, this is particularly staggering. 72% of black households cannot cover basic expenses for 3 months in the absence of income, compared to 42% of white households. And the pandemic is exacerbating what it was already a difficult situation. Families that already struggle with high levels of medical, student, and other debt now have to deal with uncertain or no wages for an indeterminate amount of time, make it difficult for them to cover basic expenses. And this is going to ripple through the businesses and other critical providers of jobs and services, healthcare, education, affordable housing. People who work in restaurants, hotels, stores, all these industries are particularly being hard hit. And these are industries that already where the average wages are less than other industries in the Deep South. We've got a large gap between other states and Mississippi in terms of annual pay in these industries. And so we really start from a tough position, and COVID will impact those of us and our neighbors who are on the financial edge, both health-wise and economically. Over almost 110,000 Mississippians are likely to lose their jobs by midsummer, according to a recent analysis that we saw. This is 11% of the private sector workforce. Those in the leisure, hospitality, and retail make up a quarter of Mississippi's workforce. And again, these are going to be disproportionately affected and will have a little cushion or support. We're already seeing the pain of the job losses. In Mississippi, more than 37,000 workers have filed for unemployment in the last 2 weeks. This is up from almost 30,000 cases since March 4th, or a 2,700% increase since March 14th. And so we are really looking at some really unparalleled economic difficulties. Here at Hope Credit Union, we are seeing these stories regularly. We have a steady stream of people coming into our branches looking for deferral on mortgage payments, on various loans, people needing resources to help make ends meet. And it's very, very disheartening to see some of the things that people are having to contend with. It's very similar to what we saw after Hurricane Katrina and after the financial crisis. And we had a call in our West Point office where someone had she was a woman who was struggling to make a mortgage payment. She had gotten apparently been approached by a payday lender trying to get her to take out a loan with a 700% interest rate. Fortunately, when they called our office and wanted to verify the income, we got the member, the borrower on the line and asked her what she needed, and were able to get avoid that her getting into that debt trap. We know that predatory lenders are looking to exploit people, the most vulnerable people during these time of crisis. I really hope that the legislature at some point takes this bold step and eliminates this predatory practice. You know, I think there are some things that we can do to tackle this. I can't say enough about the leadership of Congressman Thompson and members of Congress in acting to put the stimulus resources in place. There were more things that I think we would like to see, and hopefully we'll see in the future. Congressman Thompson took the lead in advocating for resources for nonprofit lenders, for community development finance institutions that are on the front lines serving those communities that can't get access to traditional financial services. Congressman Thompson mentioned the Paycheck Protection Program, and that is a program that is going to make loans to a range of businesses, small businesses with less than 500 employees, including sole proprietorships, independent contractors, self-employed people, nonprofit organizations, veterans organizations affected by the Congress, if they keep their employees. The loans are going to be at very favorable rates. There will be no fees charged to the borrowers, and a significant portion of the loans, up to 100%, can be forgiven if the funds are used for payroll costs, interest on mortgages, rent, and utilities. And so it's a very important, very much needed program. SBA rolled out the final rules about 6 o'clock tonight, so we hope we'll be able to be able to roll this out on our websites tomorrow morning. HopeCU.org. We know that there are a lot of businesses that are going to have are going to be running to access these resources. It is, while there's a lot of money, $350 billion, I think, that can go away a lot quicker, I think, with all the businesses that are closed. And so I really urge people to act quickly, go online, or reach out to Hope Credit Union or your financial institution and make sure that you take advantage of this program. Corey, I'll wind down, but I do want to say that, again, the devastation caused by this, against the backdrop of people who are already in very precarious financial situations, just means that more policy leadership, like that demonstrated by Congressman Thompson, is necessary to assist those who are most fragile and most low-wealth people in communities. Things like reining in predatory lending, expanding access to direct cash support for workers and small businesses, regardless of the immigration status, support for institutions and organizations that are on the front lines in these communities that are hit hardest by the crisis, and support for community development finance institutions like HOPE that are on the ground meeting the needs of these folks who are facing dire economic distress. And so, again, thank you. I really want to, again, say thank you to our medical professionals who are on the front lines of this, and all the leaders who are helping to make sure we get on the other side on solid footing. So thank you, Corey.
Thank you, Bill. Bill, we did have one question that came in, and it's related to something that you talked about. You talked about the Paycheck Protection Loan Program, but the question is are these type of supports and resources available to nonprofits in addition to being available to those for-profits?
Yes, yes. This is the typically SBA program is not available to nonprofits, but they are specifically available to nonprofit businesses. I think there's an acknowledgement that nonprofits provide critical services and that they are a significant source of employment in places like Mississippi. After government, nonprofits are often the largest employers in some of our most low-income communities. And so it is, I'm glad that nonprofits are able to take advantage of this.
Thank you, Bill. Next, we will hear from the National President and CEO, Derek Johnson, for the NAACP to talk roughly about what are those things that we should be considering as we continue to move forward and advocate and make sure that our communities have the resources that they need. Derek? Derek, are you with us?
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Very good. So thank you, Corey. Thank you, Nishami, for pulling together this call. I hope this is the first of a series of calls. Having information is going to be critical during this time. Some of us had to live through Hurricane Katrina. Those who live on the coast know firsthand the necessity of leaning on the network we call the African-American community. In many cases, it'll be through our network that we can learn of the supports that will be required for us to get through this dark period. You know, it is interesting to watch the daily press conference with the person that's serving in the White House. It is one of buffoonery, misinformation, and just ignorance. It is unfortunate that this pandemic, as we see it, was actually created by his ineptitude, not because of the lacking of our medical professionals. But we are now living in the midst of that ineptitude in a way in which unemployment has skyrocketed. And it will continue. For the NAACP, it will be our job, our mission, to identify where the inequities in the response is lacking, particularly for African Americans. In addition to that, we are encouraging our community to pay close attention to all the vendors that you use daily, whether it's your cable provider, your electricity, and make sure they don't begin to engage in any unnecessary price gouging. And on the reverse of that, know that you may have stronger standing to renegotiate your vendor support, particularly your home mortgages. There are support in the legislation for those of you who may be struggling with home mortgage payment. And where we have close to 1,000 people on the call, many of you serve as the information source in your community. So make sure you receive accurate information and that you're sharing accurate information. And there is nothing wrong with the word "I don't know," but it's also incumbent and important that we as community leaders in our local communities try to provide the necessary information by doing due diligence and providing people with good information. This is an opportunity for us as African American community to begin to navigate together and come out stronger. So with Corey and Nishambi pulling together these informational calls that I am sure will be a series, I hope you would encourage others to join in. Because on these calls, it is the goal to provide timely, substantive information to help you navigate any medical concerns you may have or public health issues in your community, to understand the public policy impacts that coming out of this most recent stimulus recovery, and I'm sure there will be a fourth stimulus recovery where many of you I hope, would join the call and provide input so the Congressman and Senator Turner can take that input and try and seek to include it in any further packages. And finally, it is unfortunate that our governor lacks any courage or vision to create a stay-at-home place up until tomorrow. We will see the outcome of his inaction 2 weeks from now, and that's unfortunate. But it would be even more unfortunate if we don't take heed to what we're seeing across the country and we actually stay home, stay in place. There is no need to be in public to mourn a loved one. Funerals are considered public gatherings that can now be a situation where you put others in risk. In Albany, Georgia, just last week, 2 weeks ago, I'm sorry, there was a black church who decided, counter to all of the advice, to have a funeral. And as a result of that, 8 people in one family contracted COVID. We cannot put our people at risk. We should not see this moment as the opportunity to do what we've always done. Because if we do that, we put not only ourselves, our family, and those who are around us at risk. Take heed to the medical advice. Wash your hands, stay away from others, as those of us who are around the country continue to work to ensure that as we come through this recovery, it's a recovery that's equitable for our community, and our community come on the other end stronger and better as a result of going through these trying times. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Derek. As we mentioned at the beginning of this call, that we knew there were a lot of questions and a lot of concerns that people had. And we wanted to try to cover and include as much information as possible while at the same time recognizing and being respectful of folks' time. We had a number of questions that were submitted. We have two pressing questions that were submitted that I would pose to our panelists and any panelists who can speak to these questions. We would appreciate that. One is as we've talked about the impact and the issues in the African American community, I think Bill mentioned this in terms of assets and wealth. There was a question posed about how does this directly impact or affect particularly African American women in Mississippi when you think about the intersection between race, gender, and poverty. Is there any support or things that could speak to or support particularly the folks who are the backbone in our community as we begin to try to make sure that everybody in our community have the resources that they need. And so I wonder if one of our panelists can speak to this in the context of this intersection between race, gender, as it relates to this pandemic and the economic front.
This is Angela Turner-Ford. Angela Turner-Ford. I can just, I guess, respond to that in general. What we're hearing and what we're seeing about COVID-19 is it does not discriminate. You know, we're seeing celebrities who are contracting the virus. You know, we're hearing about neighbors and friends who are contracting the virus. Now, if there is a correlation, I would say that it would relate to individuals who have comorbidities. So if there are other illnesses that people have, high blood pressure, I think diabetes, if you're immunocompromised, those types of conditions make individuals more susceptible to infection with COVID-19. So we do know that we have, you know, there are segments of our community, segments of our population that have these illnesses, and therefore they're more susceptible. But this seems to be an equalizer, for lack of a better way to refer to it. So that's the best way for me to answer that. I don't have any actual statistics, but I do know that the, the less healthy a person is, the more likely they are to be impacted by the infection.
Corey, I'd also like to respond to that question. This is Sandra Melvin. One of the deficiencies in the data that I presented earlier is the information about race. But I can speak to gender without being able to say if it's white women or black women. Based on the data here in Mississippi, we know that more women are infected with the COVID-19 compared to men. Actually, 59% of the cases were among women. And I think that that may speak to the fact that women tend to be the caregivers in the household. So these orders to stay in place, to stop transmitting, have big impacts for households, too, because when you don't stay in place, you bring those things back to your family, and it's a trickle-down effect. So I would say that in terms of how women are affected right now, I can't speak to how black women are affected because I don't have data about how many of those women are black. But I can say that because we do see an increase of women who have the infection, that just speaks to them probably tending to people with the symptoms or being the caregivers in the home. So there are some implications for how many women may or may not be affected by this virus the longer that it goes on.
Corey, I would just add, if I might, there is evidence that correlates poverty and health. And we know that people of color, women of color, are among those who are most affected by poverty. And so I think there's going to be a disproportionate level of risk associated with women of color. In terms of resources available to women, I'm proud that HOPE is a woman-owned financial institution. It's a minority-owned financial institution, and so we are very eager to make sure the resources that we have available and that we can deploy through the SBA stimulus program are available to those who are disproportionately on the outside of the economy looking in, and certainly women and people of color.
Thank you all. And Congressman Thompson, this question is for you. You spoke earlier about this last package or relief package that was passed. Are there any conversations, considerations that more may need to be done to make sure that communities have what they need? And even specifically, we have one question that asks, would certain professions, like medical professions who are still working at this time, would they be able to get some type of support as they're continuing to work through this pandemic?
Well, thank you for the question. In this stimulus package is money available to hospitals, community health centers, clinics, and other facilities. Now, the next package will focus on jobs, but those jobs won't just be jobs building roads and bridges. We'll also be building hospitals. We'll be reopening hospital facilities that are closed. We'll be rehabbing facilities that need rehabbing. So there's a lot coming. We spent a good bit of today talking with people about what it is we can do. So perhaps in lieu of continued unemployment pay, we will look at this stimulus four package more as a jobs program that will satisfy some of the infrastructure needs here in the country, but also get some people back to work making a decent buck. The good thing is, if we're successful with that, Davis-Bacon wage rates will prevail, which means that you can't pay somebody less than what that job is supposed to pay. And we've had several programs like that in the past. But in addition to that, we're going to make some special attention to medically underserved areas. The majority of the state of Mississippi, our counties are medically underserved. So we will have a formula designed in the next package specifically addressing those areas that are short of medical personnel. So there will be some obvious advantages in the next package.
Thank you, Congressman. So again, I would like to thank all of our panelists for participating in this and providing some very important information to our communities. Part of our reason for One Voice and Mississippi NAACP for doing this was to create a space so people can get real-time information and be informed in what's happening and what's going on. As Derek mentioned, we do believe and see this as a series of calls. We know there are a lot of issues. We know that even those topics that we covered today, we can go very deeply into them, whether it's talking about the health care, whether we're talking about jobs and the economic impact. The other thing that we also understand is that at this time, it's creating a lot of stress on individuals, families, and communities as we think about how we show up each and every day, how we show up to support each other. And so before we close out our conference call tonight, we invited Pastor Reginald, Reverend Reginald Buckley, who served as pastor at Cave Chapel, Missionary Baptist Church, to just offer some words of inspiration for us before we conclude our conference call tonight. Reverend Buckley.
Yes, Dr. Wiggins, thank you for inviting me to share with you on tonight, and to Congressman Thompson and to Derek Johnson and to all of the other panelists who are doing critical work for Mississippi citizens. We thank you for all that you're doing. I want to offer a word of inspiration, but before I do, let me also just say a word, a quick word, to the faith community, because churches are also challenged at this moment. The church, you know, is really the heartbeat of Christ, but also the heartbeat of our communities. And because of that, we're always looking for ways of what we can do, how we can serve, how we can act that best demonstrates the love of God, particularly to the least, the lost, and left behind. But I really believe that this is a moment for the church to really consider how we can best be our brother's keeper. What I mean by that is because this virus is so contagious, because this is so deadly, I think that we in the faith community should consider if our actions of benevolence or charity end up being more like throwing water on a grease fire. We may feel good about it initially because we've done something, but in reality, we will have contributed to making a bad situation worse. So I might take a hit for this, but I'm going to say it. I would invite the faith community to be still. To be still. That's something that we're not used to doing. I know it. We want to get out and do something and make a difference and make a change. But God told Moses at the Sea of the Red Sea, be still and see the salvation of the Lord. And the reason I say we need to be still is because when this is over and after this is passed, we're going to need the church to be healthy. We're going to need the church to be ready to minister to people whose lives have been turned upside down. We're going to need the church to be actively engaged in helping the put people's lives back together, their families and communities back together. And we can't be that kind of church if all of our people in all of our communities end up getting sick. And so I invite my brothers and my sisters, my pastor friends, all of us to really consider how we go about ministering and how we go about doing business in these different, very different times. Now, I was asked to give a word of inspiration, so let me do that. Tonight, I am incredibly encouraged by what I've heard. I'm inspired by what I've heard. The information that has been shared has given me hope, and I'm absolutely convinced that we are going to get through this. My hope that as a nation and as a state, that we don't simply go through this, but we grow through this, that we grow in our understanding of what it means to be a community, that we grow in our capacity to share and be there for one another, that we grow in our depth of compassion for one another, and we grow in our ability to work with each other for the common good of this nation, ensuring that we don't leave the least of those behind. My hope is that, and my prayer is that, we grow to do the right thing, to erase the disparities that exist in our state without having been forced to do so by a pandemic. And I would just end by simply saying the psalmist asked the question in Psalm 13, how long? How long will you hide your face from me? He asked the question over and over again, how long? How long must I take counsel in my soul? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? Corey, I don't have the question to that. I don't have the answer to that. I don't have the answer to how long, but I can say that as long as God is with us, we'll get through this. As long as God sits on his throne, he will never abdicate his authority. As long as we demonstrate the love of God, we as a people will come through this. God will be glorified, and the community and this state will be edified. God bless you. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you, Reverend Buckley, for those words of inspiration. And as we begin to close, the last voice that we will hear from our national president and CEO for NAACP, Derek Johnson. Derek, I think you may be on mute.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good deal. So as we close out the call, I want to make sure we don't forget to do something that's really important for our own self-care, and that is to get out the house and walk around the block. Make sure we don't use this moment and we become unhealthy trying to stay healthy from the pandemic. That's extremely important to also understand. Social distancing can also lead to social isolation, which leads to depression. So please call your neighbors, call your family, call your friends just to say hello, just to check in, because we don't want to create a moment where, as we're avoiding one sickness, we create another sickness. And that sickness is depression, or that sickness is becoming unhealthy because we are not used to sitting around. So make sure you get out and walk. And as I was talking earlier, I had a text, someone said, you're breathing heavy. I walk every morning and every night. And this call was doing my walk. And it's important for all of us to go get out and exercise, check on our neighbor, so that we can come out of this as strong as possible. Thank you all very much, and I look forward to listening to you on the next call.
Thank you. I'd like to thank our panelists and thank everyone who participated on this call. I think at last count, I think we had over 500 people who were participating in the call. We will be sharing and reposting the call information, the recording of the call on our Facebook, on our social media. We will be sending out an email to share. And also, we ask and encourage everyone to be on the lookout for more information to make sure that we are keeping our community informed. And thank you all on behalf of One Voice and the Mississippi NAACP. Everyone have a good night.